Hi, and welcome to Shadow Talk's weekly intelligence summary track, where our team of analysts dive into the top threat intelligence stories each week. To read their full findings and analysis, make sure to visit resources.digitalshadows.com. Now here's your host, Harrison Van Riper.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to March 2019. It's March 1st. I'm Harrison Van Riper, back with another episode of the Weekly Intelligence Summary. With me this week in Dallas, actually, for a change, is Rose Bernard. Rose, how are you enjoying Dallas?
I think that Dallas needs to work out, make its mind up on what weather it wants,
on the weather.
and then stick with that weather.
Like a saying in Texas where it's like, if you don't like the weather, just wait a week and it will change.
Wait a week, wait an hour.
Yeah, that too. All right, so then also from London, we have the illustrious Philly D. Philly D, how are you doing?
Yeah, not too bad, like an illustrious.
you like that little header
now
title?
Now he'll be unbearable the rest of the week.
Okay. Are you holding down the fort while Rose is here?
Well, I think silence speaks down.
No more confidence.
Excellent. All right, so let's jump into it. This week, I can't believe that our main story is about one of my favorite topics, which is cryptocurrency.
Oh, God.
A self-propagating Monero miner was seen over the last couple of months. Billy D, you were the Insom analyst this week, so give me the scoop.
Yeah, so this Monero cryptocurrency mining operation was identified using Mimikatz and Radman for the first time in tandem. So the attacks appear to be ongoing, targeting unknown entities in China, Taiwan, Hong Kong, and Italy, and has been active throughout January and February this year. Although cryptocurrency mining operations are relatively benign for most organizations, this attack highlights how historic exploits and relatively unsophisticated tools can be used in conjunction, especially to boost the efficiency and complexity of these attacks. So the operation has three stages, and it seeks devices vulnerable to this MS-17-010 exploit. So that's been previously patched. Approximately 6,500 devices have been affected to date. It's clear that organizations need to patch and update these systems, even those vulnerable to seemingly outdated vulnerabilities. The first stage, after identifying the vulnerable device, involves delivering the InfoSteel ADS malware. So this seeks out systems data and establishes a direct communication channel with the attacker C2. And then once that data has been delivered, it will request the next stage to initiate. So that's the delivery of a Python-packed Mimikatz variant, along with an undisclosed crypto mining malware seeking out Monero currency. So this Radman tool is also delivered. So this is to strengthen and establish a command communication channel, especially for the third stage. So the third stage comes along, and it's probably the most important one. So it's the ability to use a feature of Mimikatz to identify auto-generated IPs that are susceptible to the same exploit. So this allows the kill chain to replicate the like worm-like behavior. So we often see low-level threat actors, or those new to the scene trying to buy off-the-shelf malware, or trying to capitalize on the features to boost their own sophistication. So it creates this vicious cycle where pen testers and those who use them for legitimate means are trying to enhance the tool capabilities to ensure their own networks are as secure as possible. But then these threat actors are obviously going to see this as a trend and use it to their advantage, often manipulating the malleability for a range of potential destructive attacks.
Cool. So I have to say this article has another cool graph from you, Phil. That's 2 weeks in a row now where he has cool graphs. I think he's onto something here.
You didn't see the first draft of that graph.
Yeah, I went through a couple. you got shut down, not going to lie.
Well, it was cool. The end product was great. I liked it. So yeah, remember, listeners, if you want to see Phil's cool graphs, download the full intelligence summary at resources.digitalshadows.com. And yeah, you can read the entire intelligence summary there. All right, so moving on to some of the other highlights this week. Rose, there was a new ransomware that was targeting network access storage devices.
Yes, so it's a ransomware and it's called Cryptor. And it was kind of first reported by, or publicly reported in early, mid-February, so 19th February, after the files of a D-Link DNS 320 NAS drive was ransomed. So the initial attack vector is probably vulnerabilities in an older firmware of D-Link DNS 320 NAS drives. It's ransomware, right? So we know what it does. What's kind of interesting about this one is that decryption keys are being sold by the group on the Open Bazaar online marketplace for about $1,200. So instead of kind of individual ransom demands to different people, they're just selling decryption keys. The group have said that they haven't, or they're not monitoring URLs or IP addresses, so they're just doing this for financial gain. And that's kind of reinforced by the fact that they're also offering decryption keys for another ransomware known as SinoLocker. We don't know much about them, but the fact that they've got these two kind of relatively successful ransomware variants and they're using them, selling the decryption keys, kind of indicates that they have experience, or they're at least relatively sophisticated. So it's targeted NAS drives. We've also seen it targeting Linux embedded devices. We think that it can target both Linux and Windows environments, and it's likely to increase that in the next 3 to 6 months because the code can be adapted. Well, so, you know, companies are advised to obviously regularly back up their data, as with all ransomware, but it's kind of one to keep an eye on, particularly this idea of selling the decryption keys wholesale in the marketplace.
That's interesting. We haven't really seen that before, have we? That's a really interesting development there.
But it's quite an interesting model, right? Mm. Because you're taking out that communication directly with your victim, which is where all of the vulnerabilities come in, like where they can trace back to you. You have to go, you have to give them a Bitcoin wallet, all of that kind of thing. But if you're just selling the decryption key, mm-hmm. then...
Well, also it's like the users that don't necessarily know that process, how it works and stuff mm-hmm. like that. Like mm-hmm. it's harder for them to buy Bitcoin and yeah. put in that complicated address and everything like that. So interesting. No, that's a really interesting one. All right, so Phil, back over to you. A North Korean threat actor was seen targeting U.S. universities.
Yeah, so we don't know exactly which North Korean actor or whether it's attributed to the state itself, but they were targeting a United States university along with like a national security or a nuclear specialist think tank. And this was on the verge of a conference surrounding the denuclearization of North Korea. So this comes at a specific time as well when President Trump was meeting with the North Korean president.
So I think actually there's something really interesting to say about supply chain attacks and universities. So because traditionally universities are seen or perceived as weaker than things like think tanks or things like governments, just because there are more people, right? And the chances that you're going to get some grad student who has been up for the last 36 hours and is just going to click on a link, I have been that grad student, is really, really high. And when you get quite high profile universities who are then targeted, or so they're partnered with think tanks, with governments, that's quite an easy in for groups. So things like, you know, North Korean threat actors targeting these US universities, the universities themselves might not be the end target. It might be as a way of getting sensitive information.
Right. And do we have any idea of what they were targeting, what info they were targeting?
Not that I know of, no.
Not really, but the fact that they are impersonating a nuclear security expert is quite a specific thing. Sure. So you would expect it to be within that department.
Related to that.
Otherwise, again, if you're that tired grad student, you're going to get an email about nuclear security and you'll be like, nah, I'm
no thanks.
I read Renaissance literature. What do you want from me? So I think that we can make like a couple of assumptions about who they're targeting, why they're targeting it, particularly the time, as Phil said.
Cool. Yeah, that makes sense. All right. And then Rose, back to you again. This MarioNet proof of concept attack, what is it?
Yeah, so it's a proof of concept attack, and it uses service worker API, which is the mechanism that prevents kind of user interfaces from freezing when you render a web page. And it uses that as a side channel to uphold a connection with the infected user to run the malicious code. So what that means is that when the domain is visited, a service worker is created to isolate operations. These render a web page user interface and then prevent the browser from freezing under an increased workload. So you can kind of then run code using that channel. Mm. So it's quite an interesting one because it is this development of the 12-year-old puppet net proof of concept. So closing a browser's tab or navigating away from that malicious domain doesn't mitigate the threat. It's kind of interesting in and of itself, but when you combine that with a botnet operator who need that established communication with an infected device to run those operations through that host, that threat then becomes magnified. it is a proof of concept. So, you know, it means that we're just kind of seeing that come through. But we know from the speed of adoption between people putting out proof of concepts and financially motivated threat actors, nation states picking them up, that it's really likely to be used in the next kind of, I guess, 3 months. You can mitigate against it by only enabling service workers for trusted sites on a browser extension and invoking whitelist policies. But it's kind of that next evolution in botnets and the use of botnets.
That's interesting. Mm. Yeah, this was a really cool insight this week, actually.
You know, sometimes...
Every week they're interesting.
I mean, I am obviously horribly offended and we will be having words after this. But yes, it was particularly interesting.
It's interesting because we're seeing a lot of new things, right?
Yeah,
a lot of new things
absolutely.
Come up
yes.
and
new developments in the
exactly,
threat landscape.
Yeah. Every week they're interesting.
I'm still horribly offended.
All right, cool. Well, excellent. Wrapping everything together, if each of you could give me one piece of forward-looking updates, that would be amazing.
So I think this will be really pertinent to you, actually, as somebody who's going to RSA.
Yes.
So we do see a lot of phishing themed deals associated with security conferences. We saw a lot with Black Hat. And I think that a forward look coming up is if you're going to RSA, if you're working in that industry, expect there to be some kind of spear phishing attack coming your way. And that's for a couple of reasons. So the most obvious reason is spear phishing loves to use current events, you know, cybersecurity people have a lot of interesting information that's going to be useful. So don't click on any links.
I'll try my best.
The other thing is if you get a room full of people who call themselves security professionals, like that is a red rag to a bull for hackers, right? I'm almost like tempted to go and try something. So if you're in the business of doing it, it's kind of an easy target.
Yeah, makes sense.
So
makes sense.
Be careful. Check your emails.
I will. So I should just not respond to any emails then? Or don't even open my emails?
Especially if it's somebody claiming to be a U.S. nuclear security expert.
All right, cool. And then Phil, what about you?
So we mentioned this one last week. It was the ongoing conflict between Pakistan and India. So last week we talked about how there was an attack and then someone said, if we attribute this attack to you, we're going to turn around and attack you back. Well, it turns out that this week we've seen Pakistan has shot down, publicly claimed to shoot down two jet fighters. So that is obviously going to escalate things, I think, further. So any sort of nation state involvement or any sort of nation state monitoring of the situation is going to escalate. And we also think now that because there's been a confirmed military attack and it's been claimed by one of the parties, hacktivist activity might step in and any incursion will also likely increase.
India and Pakistan have a real history of hacktivist and patriotically motivated hacktivist attacks. So we would expect that kind of back and forth between them.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of, they've targeted each other quite consistently.
Consistently. Cool. Mm-hmm. Not cool, but...
Yeah.
All right. So
it would actually be really interesting to see if, so you've essentially got two states who are still officially at war and they're now, there are heightened tensions, there's some military activity. And when we've seen that previously, so an example would be Ukraine and the Crimean conflict, and whether we see that spilling over into cyber attacks. Mm-hmm. And we kind of did with Ukraine because Russia. But what happened was there was never a cyber capable target to the extent that there is between India and Pakistan, where they're both essentially playing on the same level in terms of cyber capability. So actually, if this kinetic conflict spills over into a cyber conflict, I think that would probably be one of the first instances we have of an acknowledged cyber element between two parties
that are at the same level,
exactly,
yeah,
on a kinetic plane.
Yeah.
And that would then force us to rethink the way that we think about cyber policy. And I hate the word cyber warfare, but it's dumb because it's dumb. But we would essentially have to consider that now as part of a realistic strategy.
Yeah, interesting. No, it's definitely something to keep an eye on. All right, so that will do it from us this week. I will be at RSA next week along with other members of the Photon research team. So if you're there, be sure to stop by our booth and say hi. I'll have a black hoodie on in true hacker fashion.
I'm judging you.
Yeah.
I just want you to know that.
Well, you know.
Pierluigi style.
We have cool photon.
I'm still judging you.
Yeah. So the question this week, sorry, Phil, but it's going to be kind of more Rose related. But we went to a Dallas Mavericks game, which is basketball, in case, you know, some listeners may not know.
I did not.
Yeah. This was Rose's first basketball game. So what do you think of that?
It was an experience.
Yeah.
So, you know, for background, my sport was rowing, which is very much 7 minutes and then you've won or you've lost. There's very little outside. But, you know.
There's not four quarters.
There was a little bit of a play and then everybody stopped and then there were people banging drums and then people played more. Didn't really understand what was going on. So I did understand that there was one player called Luka,
mm-hmm.
who is Slovenian.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody loves.
Yep. Because he's so good.
Well,
he's amazing.
Presumably.
Yeah.
He's like 19. I can't comment on that. He must be a king in Slovenia. Yeah.
He is the Slovenian king.
And then on the other team, there was a player called Wesley.
Mm.
He had great hair.
Mm.
And I spent a large portion of the game trying to work out if they were best friends.
Mm.
Because I think they were.
I think they were.
I think they were.
Yeah. Were they guarding each other?
Yeah. Okay. They were best friends.
Yeah. Did they high five?
Did a little bit. A hug.
Yeah. Oh, well, then definitely.
It was super cute.
Definitely. All right. Well, awesome.
That's my takeaway.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
I think that my commentary was much better than the man who was doing the commentary, which was mostly just, yeah.
They just kind of screamed defense, offense. Yeah.
And I was like, are they best friends? Is that man wearing socks or compression sleeves? If he's wearing socks because he's so tall, does he have to get other size socks?
I'm sure they do.
Oh.
Yeah.
A relevant question.
Yeah, no, all applicable.
Thank you.
Yeah, all right, so that will do it. Thank you, guests. Thank you, listeners. Talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.